So, Bob, I have an email from a patron I want to run past you. What do you say?
Absolutely. Let's talk.
This is the psych took. Let's took or talk?
Talk.
Did you say took?
I might have.
It kind of sounded like you said let's took.
Don't edit that out. Okay. Let's leave it in.
This is the Psychology in Seattle podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Kirk Honda. I am chair of the Couple and Family Therapy Program at Antioch University, Seattle, and I'm also a licensed marriage and family therapist.
And I am Bob Gettle. I'm a counselor downtown here in Seattle and a licensed counselor myself.
Where is your office? Is it North
Capitol Hill.
Oh, Capitol Hill. Okay. This is from patron Ethan. Dear Dr. Honda, first of all, I love the podcast and I'm a patron of it. I have questions regarding the education required to become a therapist. I've been considering becoming a psychotherapist. I'm trying to figure out what makes sense in terms of pathways to it. Do you have a sense of the difference between an MSW versus an MA, an MFT, or MHC? The episode on why people become therapists was great, but I was wondering, what are some of the things you think people should consider before becoming a therapist? Any thoughts you can provide would be greatly appreciated. Bob, what do you say? This is right up our alley, right?
Absolutely. Let's took.
So Bob and I made the leap at the exact same moment in October of 1995 to start our graduate program. I was in marriage and family therapy getting my master's, and Bob was getting his master's in mental health counseling. But we were at the same school, and our school combines those two and has a lot of overlapping classes. So, you know, what advice do we have to people in terms of what they should consider and before making that leap and how they should make that leap?
That's a really good question. I don't actually know.
Yeah. Well, say you had a younger brother or a cousin or, I don't know, a nephew, a niece. I don't know why I have to make it a male. Why am I? Oh, because it's patron Ethan. Maybe that's...
Oh, well, yeah. Right.
Yeah, but anyway. Okay. So say Ethan is your nephew, right. Young guy, 22. He's like, I want to be a therapist, but I'm not sure. Mm-hmm. What should I think about and what direction? And if I did decide, like, how do I decide what graduate program to go to?
Oh, right. Yeah. Well, I think everybody that's embarking on becoming a therapist should be in therapy or have been in therapy at some point.
Okay, good. You learn about what it's like,
yeah,
and you get an idea of what the job is like.
Right. Yeah. And I'm always kind of leery about folks who've never been in therapy.
I know, right?
It's just really weird.
Yeah. We just recently, I don't know, 4 or 5 years ago, made it a requirement in our program now.
Rock on.
Because remember back in the day, it wasn't...
Oh, not at all.
Wasn't a requirement.
And so in the PsyD or the MA?
MA, yeah.
Right. Good.
Right. So, and PsyD, all the psychology programs.
Good.
It's required now to be in therapy. But it wasn't before. The reason why we didn't require it before was because whenever you add a requirement to a program, you have to enforce it.
Right.
Which means that if someone doesn't do it, you have to kick them out of the program or like impose sanctions. And you have to keep track of it. And you have to like have paper. It's like it adds, whenever you add a requirement, it creates a lot of problems.
Right.
And our thinking was, you know, let students make their own choice. Plus, most of them are in therapy anyway.
Most of them.
And the other thing is, how do you force people into therapy when they don't want to be, was another thought. But then at a certain point, there was this tipping point where we're just like, fuck it, let's just make it a requirement. Yeah. This is ridiculous.
Yeah.
Most other programs that we know of anecdotally make them do it.
Right.
And I think it's a reasonable requirement.
I do too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Plus, we offer cheap therapy to our students. Yeah. Our new graduates, you know, people that just graduated, we will ask them to offer sessions for $35 an hour, a session, which is really cheap.
Yeah.
And not use insurance, but $35 a session, and you're being therapized by a graduate of the program that you are in. So the therapist knows what you're going through intimately.
Yeah.
And it's been a wonderful program. The clients universally love it. They're like, oh my God, I'm so glad you connected me with that person.
Yeah.
And of course, it introduces some interesting dual role, you know, issues for everyone. But navigated well, it works out really well.
Yeah.
So anyway, When you decided to go to Antioch, how did you decide to go there and not one of the other schools?
Yeah, good question. Actually, Tony Collis at my interview dissuaded me.
From going to Antioch?
Yeah.
Really?
Did I tell you that?
No.
Yeah. I picked Antioch for geographical reasons.
Okay,
I lived in Seattle. It was close by.
Where were you living at the time? Were you living
West Seattle?
West Seattle. Oh, that's right. That's right.
And also because it was a master's program that I could do in 6 quarters.
Yeah. Back then, you could get the CMHC degree in 1.5 years.
1.5 years.
Now, at a minimum, I think it's 3 years.
Yeah. Which is probably better.
Yeah.
It was pretty quick and dirty when we were in school. Though, I would say a very good experience. I really liked graduate school, and I did learn a lot. It was good.
But did you consider Seattle U and SPU and... these other places?
Well, those two are religiously based, so that wouldn't appeal to me. And the only other program around was, the UW had an MSW program.
Yeah. Why didn't you choose that?
I think because I was actually interested in psychology and not in social work.
Yeah.
But, you know, where I'm from Pennsylvania, and at the time, you could not practice with a master's degree pretty much anywhere on the East Coast. And so when I moved out here, I met all these people that were practicing with master's degrees, and I thought they got kicked out of graduate school. With the terminal masters. And actually, it's a question I've been wanting to ask you, which is you have a nice perspective on having been a master's student and worked for many years and then been a doctoral student and now having that. What do you think?
What do you mean? Which one should people
do? So Ethan's wondering what kind of program. Should he get a master's degree? Now, he's looking at several different master's degrees and...
But there are doctoral degrees that should be considered as well, I suppose.
I think they really should, but you could probably speak to that.
Yeah. So I'll just give my general impression. I, you know, obviously don't have all the data in my head, but it depends on the region you live in.
Right.
But the United States is becoming more uniform as time moves on. But generally speaking, as I talk, it's as a West Coast, and particularly as a Seattle person, because actually California has its own kind of deal. So the Western United States, I guess this would apply to some extent the East Coast. Anyway, you have masters in social work, which some programs, masters in social work, are very similar to your and my program, Bob, of mental health counseling and marriage and family therapy. Mm-hmm. However, there are some masters of social work programs that are very different. That's the thing about social work is it means a lot of things. It can mean being a therapist. Like, for instance, my current therapist is a master's, is an MSW.
Oh, no kidding.
Yeah. And so you can be an MSW, master's social work, a licensed clinical social worker, and be indistinguishable from you and me, Bob.
That's true.
However, I've also supervised an MSW who was trained and had clinical experience almost primarily in hospitals and knew about how to do intakes and, you know, like a homeless guy comes in off the street and is being treated for some medical issue and the doctors will call the MSW and say, come in here because this person is, you know, exhibiting some sort of psychological issue. Yeah. And then the MSW rushes in and does like a 20-minute assessment and dogs barking and tries to find out if there's any mental illness, are there, you know, psychiatric medications that the person is on and, you know, and does a very quick and dirty and, you know, might be very empathic and might provide some soothing kinds of statements, but really your job is nothing close to being a therapist.
No.
You don't have an ongoing, you're not likely to have an ongoing relationship with that person. And so that's my experience with MSW people. And my guess is that, and I know this about the University of Washington's program, is that they have a certain section of their curriculum that is dedicated to psychotherapy, but they have a whole other section of their curriculum that is dedicated to the kind of work, the kind of classes that will help you be able to work in hospitals and do those kinds of assessments and that kind of stuff. Or you might work for an insurance company like Group Health, again, doing quick and dirty assessments.
Some of them do like things like discharge planning for
right
folks that are inpatient.
Right, exactly.
Yeah.
So you might work as a part of a team yeah. of psychiatrists and psychiatric people. And again, provide very little actual talk therapy in an office of that sort. Okay. So you should know that about MSW. And for some people, that's very appealing. It's like, whoa, I can do all that kind of stuff. That sounds cool. To me, that was abhorrent. Like, I just want to be a therapist. Like, I don't want to do all that other stuff. And then you have mental health counseling and marriage and family therapists who are extremely similar. So similar that they can often be extremely indistinguishable. Because you can have, for instance, Bob as a mental health counselor who treats the exact same clientele that I do as a marriage and family therapist. We both treat mainly currently in our current stage of our career, we both treat individuals and couples.
Yes.
And we both do it well. And so, you know, but I'm a marriage and family therapist and he's a mental health counselor.
Yeah.
So and as a marriage and family therapist, I could, if I wanted to, only work with individuals. I don't have to see couples or families at all. When I'm being trained, I have to work with couples and families because you need to accrue a certain amount of hours with those kinds of folks. Mental health counselors don't need those kind of hours, but they can get those hours. So,
do the MHCs, if they do family work, it counts, right?
It counts, right.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
It's just not typical.
Right.
You know, but there are plenty of, I'm in my class right now, I'm teaching applied family therapy and, there's always some students that are mental health counselors who want training in family, family therapy.
Right.
And so, and I will occasionally get post-grad MHCs who will hire me as a supervisor for their work with couples because they didn't get any specific training in that. And so they want help with that.
Very smart. It's a different animal.
Yeah, totally. It's a lot more counter-transfer-y. Now, mental health counseling today, the programs are very buttoned up. They didn't used to be when Bob was going to school.
Yeah.
Today, they're accredited by KCREP usually and have very specific guidelines.
There were certain minimal criteria to meet state requirements, right?
Right.
I don't even remember what they were, but...
Yeah, they weren't robust, just put it that way.
No, I would say not. Yeah,
yeah. And it was same for marriage, although marriage and family therapy back then had more requirements.
Yeah. When I moved to Seattle, you could be a certified mental health counselor. They didn't have a license. They had a certification and not have any graduate training. And folks that were already CMHCs were grandfathered in when the licensure come around.
Right.
Crazy.
Now, it's quite buttoned up. In a way, the current mental health counseling and to some extent the marriage and family therapy degree is equivalent to a doctorate was 20 years ago.
Is that right?
Yeah. So anyway, now marriage and family therapists, the way I like to tell people is you're trained to work with not only marriages, couples, and families, but you're also very much trained to work with individuals. So you can work with all those groups, including group therapy. Mental health counselors in the beginning tend to have specialized skills in individuals and groups and not in couples and families.
Yes.
Mental health counselors are also perhaps a little better prepared to work with mentally ill people, chronically severe mentally ill people, because internship will often involve that.
Yeah, right.
Marriage and family therapy almost never involves severe mental illness. My career and my training of other marriage and family therapists almost never involves schizophrenia or bipolar or any of those things.
Yeah.
Whereas you in your early career definitely had experience in that.
Many, many folks with those kinds of troubles.
Right. And so I could count on two hands, like how many schizophrenia, bipolar people I've seen in my 20 plus years.
Yeah.
And so, or 20 years. So, okay. So there's that
so
I will
Ethan,
say.
Should we direct Ethan to get a master's degree or a doctoral?
Right. So there's doctorate degrees in marriage and family therapy. There's doctorate degrees in counseling. Bob, you could use your degree and go into a doctoral program at Antioch called it's a KCREP program of a doctorate in counselor education and supervision. There's in my field, there's doctorates in marriage and family therapy. And then there's this whole other field that I haven't talked about called psychology.
Yeah.
And it's where you get trained to be a licensed psychologist.
Right.
and they're often accredited by the American Psychological Association, APA. And that's what I have. So not only do I have a master's in marriage and family therapy, but I also started over. And so if I just, so with my master's in marriage and family therapy, I could have just gone into a doctorate in marriage and family therapy, and that doctorate would have honored my master's in marriage and family therapy. So I would have started my doctorate midway through the doctorate, if that makes any sense. Getting a doctorate in psychology, they didn't honor my master's at all, because the way that our field works, our fragmented field works, is that they don't honor anyone else's field stuff, even though it's exactly the same. So, you know, social work, if I was to go to social work, they would say, they would treat me like I was a 22-year-old right out of college.
Now, what would you say the percentage of class overlap you and I had back in the day?
Right. So you and I, Bob, were in the same school, and our program has a very unique situation in which we offer both mental health counseling and marriage and family therapy. Usually universities will choose one or the other and will hate the other group, but we actually, you know, have cats and dogs, you know, living together just like in Ghostbusters, right? Yeah. And so what they do is they say, well, let's not, you know, let's save costs, I guess, and let's offer classes to both, you know, like we both had the same multicultural perspectives class, and both have the same counseling skills class.
Ethics
class.
Right.
Research class, because it's the same.
It's the same.
Right. So
what was it, about 75% of the classes we took overlap, you think?
Really? Yeah, maybe.
Maybe more?
I mean, I remember not distinguishing between, like, I don't remember who was who.
No.
You knew who was who at internship, because I think that was maybe perhaps the only time it really differentiated.
Right, because you guys, the MFT folks had your own supervision. We had our own, right?
Yeah. Now, because of accreditation and state requirements and stuff, it's a lot more separate.
Yeah.
We, you know, you might take 15 to 20 classes, and only 8 of those are shared. Between the two groups. Uh-huh. Anyway, so a doctor in psychology, with the purpose of getting you licensed as a psychologist, is a rigorous, very comprehensive degree that involves, you know, because being a licensed psychologist means that you're qualified, or at least you have the beginning elements of being qualified to do a lot of jobs. You and I, Bob, our master's degrees trained us basically to do one thing,
and
that was to provide clinical psychotherapy services.
Yes.
That's the general term, even though you're a mental health counselor, I'm a marriage and family therapist. You call it clinical counseling, clinical therapy, or clinical psychotherapy services.
Yeah.
As a licensed psychologist, you're trained to do that, albeit sort of briefly. I'll put it that out. But you're also trained as a minor medical professional. You have to take a lot of classes on biology and psychopharmacology. In some states, in the United States, psychologists can actually prescribe medication.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah, I think New Mexico or one of those states. Huh. And there was a big movement about 5-10 years ago that has sort of petered out to allow all psychologists all around the nation, with the idea that, one, we charge less, two, we spend a lot more time getting to know our clients. We're better able to monitor things, and there was early research showing better outcomes for psychologists.
Oh, I bet the AMA had a big problem with that, though.
Right.
Yeah, a powerful group of folk.
Right. Yeah. So, but you know, the APA is no joke either. So
that's true.
Yeah. So that's another thing I'll just say as an asterisk to all this. When you join a profession, often you join a professional kind of gang.
Yeah.
And that has meaning. And the American Psychological Association is kind of uppity. They think of themselves as superior, and maybe they are, I don't know, but they're kind of elitist. They're kind of elitists, and they consider themselves to be the top of the heap, and have an extremely robust history and practice of research and using science. And, you know, their journals are often, you know, highly regarded, and I regard them highly as well.
Yeah.
And then you have counselors who are, you know, considered to be lesser than, and, you know, 'cause they're just master's level people, even though they might have doctorates, but Then you have marriage and family therapists who, you know, depending on who you know, they might not even know about us. But if they do know about us, there's, you know, a lot of various opinions that I'll hear. Some people say, oh, marriage and family therapists are better because, you know, they're just better trained. Because back in the day, we did have more training.
It was more rigorous.
Than counselors. So, so there's sort of a general feeling out there, like, if you're going to go to someone, go to a marriage and family therapist, don't go to a counselor. Yeah. But then other people will say, you know, I heard this from a rumor through someone else saying that the woman was saying that marriage and family therapy is a dying field, like in 10 years, it won't even exist anymore or something like this. And,
really?
And maybe that's true. I don't know, but it doesn't seem like that.
I'd be surprised if that were true.
Yeah. And then you'll hear social workers or hacks, you know. Have you ever heard that before?
Like, yes.
Yeah, you'll hear people saying, you know, social workers, they don't know how to do therapy. But I'm telling you that, you know, many of them do.
Oh, yeah.
So you'll hear things. And basically all it is like, you're on the playground in middle school and the jocks are talking shit about the rockers and the rockers are talking shit about the preppies and the preppies are talking shit about the burnouts and the burnouts are talking shit about the nerds. That's all it is. It's just in-group, out-group bullshit. That's all it is. Take it from me as someone who is fully both feet in the marriage and family therapy field and then was fully 2 feet in the psychology field and has, you know, a good number of toes in the mental health counseling field since I teach mental health counseling students. I can tell you it's all bullshit. Every field has talented, excellent people and excellent things about it. And every field has a lot of bullshit about it too. Anyway, so getting back to psychology, you're also trained how to assess, how to write psychological assessments. You learn statistics and testing and measures and norms and bell curves and all the there's thousands of instruments in which you can evaluate someone's personality and learning disabilities and ADHD and psychopathology and, you know, psychosis. You know, in my psychology degree, I had a class on Rorschach. You know, I learned how to do Rorschach testing.
I bet that was cool.
Only licensed psychologists, technically speaking, can provide those types of tests.
Yeah.
Some counselors are trained to do some of what we might call the minor tests, like depression inventories and this kind of thing. But for the vast majority of assessment is done by psychologists. And you take a lot of classes on that.
Yeah.
I took a lot of classes on forensic psychology, it's not like you would think like it's Law and Order. It's more like you assess someone to see, for instance, whether or not they're sane enough to stand trial or whether they were sane at the time of the crime.
Hello, Clarice.
Exactly. So, but it sounds sexier than it is, believe me. It's a lot of monotony as far as I can tell. No offense to the forensic psychologists out there, but when I took the classes at the end of the time, I was just like, oh man, this just doesn't sound very fun. I mean, it sounded interesting at first, but then I was like, after 10 years of that, I think it would get a little bit of a drag. But that was just me.
Would you say at heart you're a clinician?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, right now I'm fully trained to do assessment, and I could care less about assessment. It just doesn't. Now, having said that, there are plenty of people that's highly interesting, and it's interesting to me, but it's so time consuming. One assessment of one patient can take literally 30 hours of your time, and or more. And if there was a fast way to do it, maybe. But it felt always like homework, you know, writing these reports. Yeah. It just feels like homework to me. Anyway, you can get paid a lot more. You can get paid to three times more per hour by doing assessments.
Even psychologists, what fee, does your fee change as a psychologist now?
So I'll get into that after I give the last thing. All doctoral level people are trained to do research.
Yeah.
And so psychologists are automatically trained to do research, but if you're a doctorate in marriage and family therapy or a doctorate in counseling, you're also trained to do research. Yeah. So I'll point that out as well. And you're also trained a little bit to do supervision, but again, doctors in marriage and family therapy and counseling are also trained to specifically increase their supervision skills. What was the question you asked?
Difference in income.
Yeah. There's a very small difference in reimbursement from insurance companies, something like 5-10%.
That's it?
That's it.
Wow, that's surprising.
So, for instance, you know, insurance companies might pay Bob and I $90 per session or $110 per session. And for psychologists, they would pay, you know, between $100 and $120 or something like that. Mm. Maybe a little more, but not much. And so, you know, and but some will say, well, psychologists, they can charge more. Well, anyone can charge as much as they want and as much as they can get away with.
Sure.
And there are plenty of psychologists that aren't, that don't have enough demand and therefore have to lower their prices. And there are plenty of marriage, family therapists and counselors that, that charge 2 to 3 times as much as I charge.
What do you charge?
I charge 140. What do you charge?
130.
Okay.
Yeah.
Oh, I'm glad to hear that actually. Cause I always, whenever I say it, I always expect someone like, really? I charge two. Cause that's a lot of my colleagues will say, I charge 250. You're really charging 140.
Don't get it.
I don't get it either. It seems exorbitant already.
Yeah.
130, 140. How often do you raise your prices?
Not in the last 2.5 years, I'd say.
Oh, okay.
Probably about once every 2.5 years.
Okay.
Probably do.
Yeah. I mean, if you're going by inflation, 3%, 2.5 years is probably about right.
Well, what do you, how often do you change?
I was 120 for 10 years.
Yeah.
And was just too lazy or something.
Right.
And at a certain point, I was just like, what am I doing? You know, and so a couple years ago, I went to 130. And then I think last year, I went to 140.
140, yeah.
And I'm planning to go to 150 at some point.
Yeah.
Maybe next year. I don't know.
Well, you should.
Just seems like a round number.
It's easier when you got to do 1.5 hour sessions if you got a round number.
Yeah. So that's what I'll say about training programs. But the overarching thing that I'll say is to patron Ethan is do your own research.
Yeah.
You're talking to us right now. You're getting our opinion. Talk to others.
Yeah.
You know, go into the field. Call a psychologist.
Yeah.
You know, we're all bleeding hearts.
All want to talk.
Right. If you call a psychologist and go, could I take you to lunch or go to coffee or sit down with you for 15 minutes and just sort of find out what your job, what do you do on a daily basis? How much do you get paid? You'll be pleasantly surprised, I'm guessing. People will respond well to that.
Ethan might consider talking to people who are interested in what he's interested in.
Right.
Maybe he's interested in families, so we want to talk to one of those folks. Or maybe he's interested in, you know, a certain kind of disorder or something.
Right. So that's another thing that I want to also say that you're talking about, Bob, which is don't think about the degree first. Think about what do you want to do.
Yeah.
Do you want to do assessments? Do you want to be a forensic person?
Right.
Do you want to work in hospitals? Do you want to be just a standard therapist who sits in an office and clients come to you? Do you want to work with couples? Do you want to do, you know, figure out the breadth of things you want to do.
Right.
And then find out the degree that gets you there.
Yep.
Too many people start with the degree. They're like, well, what degree do I want? Well, it's like, you know, it's like going to college and saying, what should I major in? You know, it's like, well, what do you want to do with
it?
You know, what do you want to do eventually?
Right.
You know, if you want to work in radio, then you get a communications degree. And if you want to work in law, then you get pre-law. Like it's very dependent on the actual activities that you want to be trained in doing. The other thing I'll say is the vast majority of the public, 99%, they don't have any idea the differences between MSWs and counselors and therapists and psychologists. I frequently have people calling me the wrong name and I don't correct them because it's like, why even go down that road?
Yeah.
I mean, I'm sure people, you know, will call you doctor sometimes.
It happened last week.
Or they'll think you're a marriage and family therapist now that you're seeing couples, you know, but they probably don't even know that exists, you know?
I don't think they
So it doesn't matter is the thing. Most, you know, people are like, well, because some people will say like, well, what's the most prestigious degree, and it's like, well, within our world we all hate each other, so you know,
depends who you ask.
Depends. And in the outside world they don't even know we have a fragmented field,
right?
You know, which I always find to just be stupid, because like in the medical field you don't have like, you know, different fields within, you have different specialties, but they all read the same medical book and they all have the same ethics, you know what I mean? Podiatrists go to the same classes for the first few years as psychiatrists.
Right.
But in our field, we have these camps, you know, and I just find that to be stupid. My dream would be we would just combine everything into one other organization, and we would just call ourselves mental health professionals, and we would have specialties in that. You know, we'd all start out with the same classes in the first couple of years. And then if you wanted to be a certified assessor, then you would go down that track. And if you would want to do, you know, advanced psychotherapy, then you go down that track. And it wouldn't matter. And there'd be one license. And yeah. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Because, you know, it confuses the matter and it makes it so much more difficult for people like patron Ethan. Because once you start something, you're kind of screwing yourself over because you can't go to the other camp.
No.
You know, you can't just say, well, I don't like counseling. I'm going to skip and go to mental. I'm going to go to marriage and family therapy. Like, it's hard to do that.
Yeah.
So.
Plus, if he's going to be a mental health counseling student, he's not going to get any training and assessment. So he misses out on the possibility of finding out about something he couldn't otherwise find out about.
Exactly.
Which, you know. That
yeah.
was me.
Yeah. And we could start sharing resources.
Yeah.
As it stands right now, we have four main professions. We have counselors, therapists, social workers, and psychologists. Each of us have our own ethical codes, which I just find extremely aggravating because they're almost identical.
Yeah.
But they are developed independently and worded differently. And I have to learn all of them because I work with people in all these professions and it's like, just get one ethical code and just, you know, it's because it's not like the psychology ethical codes are in contrast or conflict with the marriage and family therapy codes. You know, they're just worded differently or include things that psychology doesn't think need necessarily to be emphasized. Yeah. You know, but anyway.
Yeah.
The other thing I'll say to patron Ethan is to investigate the programs themselves by finding out what they do, because two counseling programs can be very different. Two marriage and family therapy programs can be very different. Two psychology programs can be very different. And people can make mistakes. I know many people that will go to programs and will quit. And yeah. then they'll end up in my program and they'll talk about what they went through. And I always just think, I wonder if that could have been solved by finding out in advance if that's, you know, like program better, was a good match. You know, like for you, Bob, you were like, oh, those other programs are religious. I'll just say in general, I know people from religious programs that have said some extremely awful things about the way their instructors were talking about gay people.
Yeah. Well, being gay ain't a mental illness.
Right. In our university, we have a safe zone, we call it. And everyone has these gay flag symbols in their offices saying that not only are we just okay with LGBT stuff, but we're actually advocates for a safe zone. And
bravo.
We adhere to certain principles of safety and of acceptance and advocacy and affirmative attitudes.
Brilliant.
Well, patron Ethan, let us know what you think of the advice. And if anyone else has other things they can add, like I'll include that in a later episode, because I frankly get a lot of questions like this. People will frequently ask questions like this. I'll close by saying to patron Ethan, good for you for hearing the call as Bob and I had years ago. Back when Clinton was president, early in his presidency.
Oh, yeah.
Bob and I received the calling to help others, to make a difference. I commend patron Ethan and all you other therapists and counselors out there for doing that. I really do consider it noble work, not because I want to pat myself on the back. I really consider it noble work. I consider it a spiritual thing, you know, it's if there is a heaven and your good deeds on the planet do create your house in heaven, you will have a comfortable place to live when you die. Well, that does it for this episode of Psychology in Seattle. Thanks for joining me, Bob.
My pleasure. Glad to be here.
And thanks for joining me out there. Please take care of yourself because you deserve it.